Too many leaders lead for validation, not impact, for what they can get out of it more than what they can give to it. Hi, my name is Chris, and I'm obsessed with how leaders grow and develop, and I too have insecure moments. We all do. Glad you're here with me now on the SiteShift podcast so you can learn how to lead for impact, not validation. Hey, everybody, welcome to a new format for the podcast. We're going to have some fun with this, and I get to introduce you to my very good friend, Mark Stanifer, operations leader at SiteShift. Mark, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
Yeah, man. So one of the things that we figured out end of last year was just looking at the companies that we serve and how we walk them through a process of transformation was that a number of them were, they had one or two family members involved. So they wouldn't think about themselves as family businesses, but they're increasing in their complexity and dynamic of just challenge to walk through change, because once you get family members involved, it's harder, it's more complicated.
Yeah.
And what we're gonna walk through today are three warning signs that you are in danger. And if you have one of these, you want to see the business continue on, you want to see it maybe a healthy succession or transition or a sale or anything like that. If you have one of these, you're going to be in trouble. If you have all three, you're really going to be in trouble. So Mark, glad to have you with me, and let's jump in.
Let's go. So what is the first warning sign to be paying attention to?
Yeah, when you bump up against these moments where there needs to be a development, instead you see defensiveness, a development of the person, development of their abilities. So, you know, we don't teach anything from an ivory tower. We're helping companies while we also grow and lead SiteShift, but it's also our own lived experience. So I actually was in a situation with my dad, whom I love very much, and we went through a lot of challenges walking through a leadership succession. And at one point, there was just so many immaturities in my leadership. You know, this was like 20 years ago. And at one point, he was calling me out for something that needed to grow and develop in me. And here's how I handled it. Oh, yeah? Well, the problem is you need to cast more vision.
How did that go?
Yeah, as you can imagine, right? It fixed everything immediately. Anytime we speak out of defensive blame, it always makes the environment better and solves the real problems, which we know isn't true. And here's what's wild to me about that moment. I actually, from a leadership standpoint, was correct about the bigger issue, but I was wrong in the immaturity with which I was defending myself and not willing to grow in a situation like I needed to. And so now I look back at that moment and I can see it with a lot of clarity, but the hinge point here is, are you even having these conversations,
yeah,
open and real and vulnerable about where you need to grow and develop, or is there defensiveness? And so let's play out some stereotypes of how this defensiveness could look. You know, you have a mother to a son, a father to a son, a brother to a brother. These are all kind of real company situations that we see all the time. And they need them to grow into and appreciate something that the other person can't see. And rather than open and receiving that, it's a, well, let me tell you why I'm right and you're wrong.
Yeah. Well, I don't have the quote unquote family business experience. One of the things we say around my family is, it's not just what you say, it's how you say it. Now, I was actually working with a client just recently who was talking about how things operate in his home and how his wife comes at issues and challenges very, very strongly. And this is his story. This is one experience. But in his way of understanding, she's coming at it with truth and understanding and clarity of what needs to be addressed. But she's coming at it with just awful form.
Yeah.
Too strong, too aggressive in the moment. So while there's truth there, the presentation comes across as very defensive in trying to accomplish really what she sees and trying to care for her family well.
So yeah, for me, I can't help but always have these kind of like turns of a phrase. It's just how my brain processes. What is defended because you're offended will always keep the organization from growing. Mm. Because it's the lid of the leadership team, where they're at, what they're open to or not open to in their own growth, expansion, and evolution. And for everybody, this is hard because, you know, what got us here as a team is great, but it doesn't get us there, as they say. And so what we're looking for is this. Is there a way in this organization to have open, real, vulnerable conversations about where every individual leader on the leadership team needs to mature? Because if that isn't happening, if this evolution isn't happening, then what you're going to have is this, when those moments do come out, and they will come out in a process of succession and transition, when those moments do come out, rather than being willing to grow and see it from other people's perspectives, we immediately kick into this. You're not gonna tell me. Go ahead.
Yeah, sorry to cut you off. Before we move into this, before I ask you about the second one, I might also add there's this other component where defensiveness can be just silence, where the reaction isn't aggression and trying to prove your point, but rather holding back. And withholding something that needs to be said, I might say it this way, if you don't say it, again, considering how you say it, but if you don't say it, is anybody else going to say what needs to be said?
Dude, I love that. And that actually was where I was headed before I headed the second one. So you did it. I mean, it's the, you know, I would say it like this too. You're seeing it because of how the narrative of your mind works in regards to leadership. You're seeing it because of how you show up in a work role or function. You have a specific fixed wiring for how you work. Both of those come together for you to see things other people aren't seeing. Mm-hmm. So if you're not, you know, getting that out, you're in trouble. That's why, you know, healthy leaders are trying to get ahead of this by saying, hey, what are you seeing that I'm not?
Yeah.
And sometimes they're not ready to communicate it in a healthy, progressive, solution-oriented way. That's ideal.
Yep.
But it's so valuable that I'm going to even say, I want to know what you feel as a protest or a complaint. And obviously, we want to train leaders to get to the point that they're not just venting the protest or the complaint and not getting to the point of having the solution. But like, if you don't know what that stuff is, it festers, it grows, it's underneath the surface, it keeps you from having a full view on things. And it takes a leadership wiring a lot of times to start something, grow something, and build something that is a little bit delusional. Mm. I mean, the number of times I've looked back and gone, man, I was delusional. But it took this belief in how good it can be to get me through these things. But when you're talking about these elements that can really take you down in transition or succession, you have to shift the way you approach it and go, it's worse than it appears. I have to assume the moment I hear a protest or a complaint, it's worse than it appears. Not to freak out, not to be super insecure about it, but to really like dig in. I want to know when they lay their head on their pillow at night, if they're complaining to their partner or spouse about something, I want to know what that is. And I want to create an environment in the meetings that we have for those to be said.
Yep.
This is making me think about something I like to say at the end of a meeting, not all the time, but sometimes, like, hey, we're done. We're going to go now. If we had another hour to meet and you were like, man, if we had another hour, I would tell Chris this. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the stuff that we want to know. And if we're moving from defensive to developing, we're drawing those out, which is the goal.
It's great. All right. Awesome. How about number two? Second thing, second symptom of danger to be paying attention to.
Yeah, so this is when we start relating to change in an unhealthy way. So you can tell that there's a danger zone here when someone is dictating change versus discerning change. Here's what I mean. For any transformation in any organization, but especially in succession, there's the battle of the young and the old, right? The way we've done it, the way we've never done it. And a lot of times these battles are stereotyped or characterized in a way that one's wrong and one's right. Mm-hmm. And it's all based on whatever someone values.
Right.
Hey, you know what? This is our podcast. We can do what we want. I'm going to throw a ton of frameworks at you. There was a framework done years ago out of Myers-Briggs, which isn't my favorite, but it at least was a good research piece to show how people respond to change. Now, I'm not going to go through all four responses. I'll give you the quick punchline. won't go through all four responses in depth. I'll give you the quick punchline, but I'm going to paint this out for why. Check me on this. Don't just believe me. Every freaking cultural battle goes wrong between, you know, cultures that are changing in a company, but especially succession transition. Here's how it works. There's somebody who has a vision of what could be. There's somebody who's protecting what has been. Visionary guardian. Relational, wants everybody to get along. Activist, excited for the change. Any mature leader walking through a change process is going to understand the visionary has to tell the activist, hold on, calm down, chill out, wait a second. And then we're going to go to the guardians and let them be a part of the process, because they appreciate things that we don't appreciate as the visionaries. Mm. They're going to help make it better. You know, if they're just defensive and saying, I won't give an inch, that's a problem. They're going to help make it better. And I'm going to give you such a practical way to think about this. The visionary goes to the guardian, help make it better. Activist, hold on. Then the relational's happy. That's a process of change to work. Now, that's almost what no one does. Stereotypically, what plays out, and I'm going to use like a real example with changing some names. This was a company going through transition, father handing off to son. Mother had been involved, front office, ran that, and had it decorated a certain way. Son comes in, new vision, dad's on board, supporting it. Part of that, not only was for the company, but renovating the space. So changes the front. Well, mom decorated the front. And I'm not demonizing mom. I mean, it's the uncle, it's the dad, it's the brother, whoever. But this is so real. This is why Jim Collins said, you cannot be a leader of leaders unless you have the courage to fire your mom. Ouch. Been there, done that. That's another story for another day that Noted. We can't share on the podcast.
Noted.
But so son changes the decor, had it changed, whatever. Mom comes to dad and says, you know, it's just not the same anymore. We're really losing our way. Dad feels the dynamic pressure of that. Loves his wife. Also, maybe he's a little worried about his son making changes too fast, too quick. Are we going to lose the payout we're expecting from the business? Mm. And now we've got a battle between visionary and guardian. And what has to happen is the person coming in with the new vision has to wear the guardian mindset a little bit. What did they get achieved that I don't fully appreciate, that I need to be willing to preserve? I know I'm going to progress this vision, but what do I need to preserve? And the guardian has to be willing to be a visionary and say, all right, naturally there's things I want to preserve, but what needs to be progressed? And if that can be balanced out, it's so much healthier than the battle that normally ensues, which is, and this was me, walking through this situation in my own personal relationship with my dad. It was like, I see the future. I know the future. This is what's going to happen. And you know, I was right about a lot. But I hadn't crawled on my elbows to get the growth that organization had achieved. And I didn't understand how precious momentum is. Mm-hmm. So I was flippant. I'm rushing into the future. And I hurt a lot of people. And we lost a lot of momentum. And there were some things in a big way that I did right. But that was a small little mindset shift that had big implications. So this one's huge, and I'll go into some more detail, but yeah, what questions or thoughts?
So I think what you're inviting the viewer, listener to consider is whether you're coming from the visionary side or the guardian side, consider the other. Consider, perhaps we could use the phrase blind spots. Consider what you don't know, what you're thinking about. What's natural to you is not obvious. Consider then what's natural and not obvious in the way the other party is bringing it. And I think with any transition, succession planning, moving from being responsible for something to delegating, giving it to somebody else, there's that tendency to want to hold on to the how, not just the letting go of the what, but you've also got to let go of the how. And recognize that the other person is bringing into this, whether guardian or visionary, the other person is bringing in something that you don't have. And so I like to think of it as, especially from the visionary standpoint, or from the person that's releasing responsibility It's letting go of the what, making sure you're clearly communicating the what, but also making sure you're clearly communicating the how. Oh, I'm sorry, that you're letting go of the how mm-hmm. and letting the person who's receiving the responsibility really, really lead forth with the how.
So glad you brought that out, because this is the moment that has to happen in healthy succession and transition. Each party so appreciates that it is the who that they're trying to serve, that the how can change, that there has to be this moment that mother puts on the son's, her hand on the son's shoulder, father does it to the son, brother to brother, whatever the succession is, and looks them in the eyeball and says, I'm with you. I'm with you. Like, some of these changes may not make sense to me. I'm going to be uncomfortable. It's going to be different. But I'm all in on you. And you can't be flippant with that or stupid with that until both parties appreciate exactly what you're saying, that the who we're serving is locked in and the how can change. That's the evolution of the business. And if you want to zoom out and see why this is so huge, you know, this is why politics is the fight that it is. There's no cultural advancement without progressing something, but not progressing so much that you lose what needs to be conserved, and conserving something, not conserving it so much that you fail to progress. Again, the battle between progressives and conservatives. This plays out on a micro level in companies and teams and change and succession and transition.
Yeah.
It's happening all the time.
Yeah.
So I'm so glad you brought that up.
Yeah, cool. All right, so we've got defensive, we've got dictating when it comes to change. I'm guessing the third is going to be a D, but
let's do it.
Let's find out.
It's too much fun to make it memorable. and this just really translates to directionless. So if we've been defensive about where we need to grow, and then we've started to dictate versus discern change, then we really end up finding ourselves directionless. And here's what directionless looks like. Directionless looks like when we expect the leadership team, executives, specifically in how we're applying it today, the family member, to match our intensity, even though we're not giving specific clarity. Mm. What does specific clarity look like? Well, specific clarity can be, we're gonna have a succession plan, and here's when it's gonna occur. And if you're in a situation right now where you're like trying to make the plan and the founder owner is like, yeah, we need to have a plan, but when it comes to committing, they never actually commit. And I learned this in my own, just paying attention to companies and stories and journeys, they're probably never going to let go. I mean, there's a reason why this field is so fraught with so much collateral damage, because they've built an identity around, you know, leading this company. And the transition to first to second generation requires a releasing of identity. Mm. Second to third generation is hard also, but that first generation is super, super difficult, because they're actually embracing a reality beyond their main identity that they've often cultivated, which is, I am the founder or owner of this business. And what happens when they are not aware at a deep level of all that, They're dissipating the anxiety they feel about what is going to be that loss of identity. And they don't even know what's happening. They would never necessarily put it to words like this, but they're dissipating that anxiety in an intense expression. Very oftentimes moralizing some nostalgic moment about the past and how they got there and why we can never lose this ground, or looking for some kind of intense expression of commitment to, well, hey, I got here early this time every day, or I was always the one involved in sales. And it was a hero effort that got that business there. But if there's going to be a healthy succession and transition, we need to learn from what they did to achieve that win. But we also have to appreciate this fact and this reality, because it's so huge, that the son or the daughter isn't going to do it the same way. Mm-hmm. You know, where mom or dad really led sales, they're going to think about sales less as a hero, more as a system, you know, if they're doing it healthy. And so we don't release into a clear next step, and we just look for this matching of intensity, and that cycle continues over and over and over again.
You mentioned not necessarily even being aware of what's happening. I wonder if it symptomatically presents to the first generation or those that are experiencing this first generation leader. I wonder if it presents as like, this is my baby. I birthed and I raised this baby and I don't want to let it go. And yet deeper underneath that is this identity that's tied up, not just in the baby, but in like being the parent of the baby. Does that make sense?
Totally. And I love that wording because I think it puts it at this level that is true for how people have cared for it. It's like they've held it close. They've nurtured it. They may have oftentimes spent more time with it, thinking about it, caring for it, than their own family. And the psychological term here is identity foreclosure. And basically, you went all in on one identity, and you've bet everything on that. And so this is why, if we're going to make the three shifts, the beginning starts to happen when the person handing off, or the team handing off, if it's becoming an employee-owned organization, all the things we see, they have to be able to imagine an identity more than the one that fueled them in the building of this company. Mm. It's an identity more than, and it's an also identity beyond. You know, they have to be able to see a fulfilling, thriving, something that's very meaningful to them, future on the horizon that they're like, I can now gravitate towards that picture. And if they don't have that, then they're stuck in this limbo where they're looking just for dissipating this anxiety and getting their own relief, which is really just a crappy way to interact with the people that you love. I've got an analogy for that, but I'll pause there. Thoughts or questions?
Yeah, go with your analogy.
So here's the way this would happen, and we can close with this and any additional thoughts you have, Mark. But it's like you're trying, you know, most of leadership is just what a healthy parent would do. And what you're specifically trying to do in a succession effort is release this business into the next generation's hands. And you can't do that unless you've released the next generation. Mm. So here's the way this works. Imagine you've got a teenager and you want them to clean their room, okay? You pressure and nag them to clean their room, right? And you know, you pressure, nag. Finally, they're going to do it. What a terrible way to lead. And I'm not trying to shame you. I know it's not easy. Three, we've both raised kids, so we understand that the stress and pressure of it can be mounting. But the same is true for a company. So imagine this. What if you didn't fight with your teenager over cleaning their room? What if you said, okay, you can have your phone for the week as long as your room is clean Sunday by noon. If your room is clean Sunday by noon, you're good. So now you've got a vision of releasing them. You're raising them to release them, and you put a system in place to help them grow. You're not going to fight with them over their room. Room's clean by Sunday at noon. Boom. You get your phone for the week. Not? Okay. We're going to take it. Here's the powerful thing here. Most executive leaders, because we'll ask them, do you like managing people? No. Most executive leaders do not like managing people. It's exhausting. It breaks down very often into managing through pressure, right?
Yep.
Nagging. We do love developing leaders. We love releasing leaders. So if you can get to a horizon beyond and go, okay, I'm raising the next generation in this business, and I'm raising them to release them. As I release the business into their hands, I'm releasing them to grow and develop into who they can become. And I don't have to pressure them to lead this like I would.
Yeah.
Instead, I'm raising to release them to lead it like they would. And that takes such an elevated view. And if you can do that, the irritation you have with how your son or daughter is different than you turns to fascination. And you get this last benefit, which is a deepening relationship. You get the dream. I mean, isn't that the dream? That it doesn't require your initiative and effort anymore, and instead you get to release it into their hands, and you watch it become something it could have never become under your leadership. And that's a humility that very few people know how to step into.
It's hard.
Yeah.
It's really hard. The way I like to think of it is this. It's the return on all of the investment. Maybe even a greater return, maximized return on the investment. Whatever you're investing into, you give a family analogy, there's certainly the business analogy. This releasing it is a way to increase the R on all of the I that you've put in.
That's awesome. I love it, man. What an inspiring way to close. No shame, no pressure. But if you've got any one of these three at work in your organization, you got some trouble, you want to pay attention to that. If you've got all three, danger Will Robinson, get into a place that you can figure it out. Now, obviously, it'd be crazy if we didn't tell you what we do to help with this. We measure and datatize a viewpoint on the insecurities so you can learn exactly where you're defensive and why you're defensive. And once we do that, we help you understand everybody, a part of the leadership team in the organization, and how they respond to change, so we can walk through change in a healthy way as we put systems in place to develop leaders who develop leaders. And then last, what happens? We're not fighting over an intense mirroring and matching that we want to see happen. Instead, we're rallying around a clarity. This is where we're going. This is who we are. This is how we serve them, and the how may change. The who is locked in. Let's freaking go. Always more at SiteShift, SIGHTShift.com. Thanks for joining me on this episode. There's always more for you at SiteShift, SIGHTShift.com, to be the leader you were meant to be.